Wednesday, March 23rd, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying healthy, all staying strong in this time. And yes, we are back here at the Dose from taking a week off for spring break. Yeah, we loaded up. We took off to one of our favorite vacation spots last week. We went back down to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for a week of rest and relaxation. Just get away from everything. Go to the beach, go to the pool, hang out and do nothing. The scenery was absolutely breathtaking. And the landscape was nice too.
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
We have been now to a few different places in Mexico. And I'm telling you, if you haven't been, the beaches in Puerto Vallarta are absolutely amazing. The water is warm. Even now in March, the sand is smooth and soft. You can walk down the beach. You're not stepping on rocks. You're not getting a bunch of seaweed and all that. We had an absolutely fantastic time. Just went down there, ate, drank, sat by the pool, walked on the beach, played in the waves with my family. We had an absolutely great time. Now, some of you may remember that we were actually down in Puerto Vallarta when COVID first hit back in 2020. And I'm telling you, it was a little bit weird. People were leaving. It was quieting down. But when we went down there this time, it felt like things were getting more back to normal. The beaches were full. The restaurants were full. Travel was really easy. Everything actually went really, really smoothly. We were watching the first round of the NCAA tournament in a sports bar down there. And if I'm being 100% honest, I may have filled out my March Madness bracket while sitting by the pool, having a drink, only half paying attention. No, I'm not making any excuses. I'm just telling you what happened. We went down there. We did meet some really great people down there. Met some people from North Dakota, some people from Nebraska, California, England. It was a great, great trip. We had a really, really nice time. It was good to get away, kind of rest, recharge, spend time with my family. But I do have to discuss one kind of odd thing that we did get the joy of experiencing. Got to share this with you listeners. Maybe you can appreciate this. We go down to Mexico. We have a great time. Then the day before you come home, you have to go get a COVID test at the resort. And then you have to give that to the airline in order to come back to the United States. That's kind of the deal that's in place right now. You can't come into the States, I guess, unless you're coming in illegally or something like that, without a negative COVID test. So we go get our tests. We get our results. We send them to the airline. Done deal. Piece of cake, right? Well, we pack up the day we're leaving. We go to the airport to fly back to Denver. We get on our flight. Pilot comes on, kind of tells flight time, all that kind of stuff, checking everything out. The flight attendant comes on and he says, hey, settle in for the flight. We're going to have drinks. We're going to have snacks. Here's what the weather's going to be in Denver. And then he says, and we do have the rule that you have to wear your mask over both your mouth and your nose the entire trip. So don't let them slide down because we will report you. Okay, I guess. I mean, we all had to have negative tests to even get on the plane. Everyone on the plane is wearing masks. The cabin air is like triple filtered and everyone is going to be pulling their mask down to eat or drink anyways, but whatever, you got all excited about that, so go right ahead, I guess. So right after we take off, flight attendant comes back on. This is on a major airline, I might add. We're not flying like one of the minor ones. This is a big one. You know this one. He comes back on. He says the flight's going to be 3 hours. We are getting up to altitude. And also, I better not catch any of you pulling your mask down. Okay. About an hour in, they go through. They hand out their goofy pretzels or peanuts or whatever. They hand out drinks, all that kind of stuff. My man jumps back on the PA system. He says, you can take your mask down to eat or drink, but you better be pulling them back over your nose between bites and sips. And by the way, the fine for refusing to wear your mask is anywhere from $500 to $30,000. And we will enforce that if we need to. Okay, so many things to unpack here. First off, you're not an air marshal. You're a flight attendant. Settle down. Stop trying to bust people. You're not on some sort of a raid. You're a flight attendant. Hand out your pretzels and shut up. Second, obviously, the science involved in all this might be a little subjective. Pull down the mask, take the mask up, eat your peanuts, pull it down, put them back up, take your drink. Like, we're all breathing the same air. It's all filtered. We've all had negative tests. Calm down, but forget all that. The group on our plane is a lazy crowd that has been in Mexico. Everyone is like sunburned. Everyone is sleepy. This isn't like a rowdy, rebellious group of teenagers pulling their masks down and just rebelling against the cause. Everyone's just kind of leaning back and waiting to get home to Denver. But as I put my headphones on and I just leaned back and I went to sleep, I was thinking about this. Maybe you can think about this a little bit too. What is the position with the least amount of true authority where the person acts like they have a ton of power? Because this flight attendant on our flight coming back from Mexico, he was in the running. Like, he thought he actually had some sort of reign over people. He didn't really have any. But like, people that think they have power and actually have zero, who would make your list? Crossing guards? You know, the ones that are working at like the elementary schools, they're yelling at you to move your car, even though you haven't even stopped and dropped your kids off yet. They're already saying, you gotta move, you gotta get out of here. Maybe they'd be on there. I suppose we could add like small town deputies like the Barney Fife guy.
Now here at The Rock, we have two basic rules. Memorize them so that you can say them in your sleep. The first rule is, obey all rules. Secondly, do not write on the walls, as it takes a lot of work to erase writing off of walls.
Acting all tough. They really don't have any power. They're cracking down on like speed traps. They're getting you for jaywalking in like a small town. WWE referees, they have zero power. I don't even know why they're there. I don't even know why that is a job. You don't do anything. Come to think of it, NBA refs are kind of the same way. They can't even call traveling. They clearly don't have any power. Let me think. Who would make my list? Act tough. Act like they're powerful. Really don't have any power whatsoever. Oh, you know who it would be? You know who I'm forgetting? The nerds dressed up in Star Wars gear at Raider games. They act tough. We know that they have no power whatsoever as they dress up like C-3PO or whatever. Yeah, they would make our list too. This guy on our flight, though, he was in the running. I don't know what his problem was. I don't know why he thought he had all the power, but he was out of control. If you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us what dork in your life is telling people what's what. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go over to Twitter or Facebook and find us there. Both of those handles there are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you're wondering why your team didn't sign that free agent that you were hoping they would. Drop us a line. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, make sure you're stopping by dailydosports.com at least once a week, maybe two or three times a week, checking out some of the new articles that are going up over there. I release the Daily Doses on Tuesday. It does usually have a local slant, but we have some things coming for you that you're not going to want to miss. I've got a few local stories that you're going to want to see. In fact, yesterday, I wrote a little bit about the Denver Broncos and the Colorado Rockies and how they seem to be going in such opposite directions. But then we also have our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, who will drop an article on Thursdays. You never know which direction he's going to go, so be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com and checking out what is going on over there. Plus, you can always find the video portion over there on YouTube. You can always find a link to the podcast. You can even find some links to some information about the host that you might not know, so be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com. Plus, you can find a link to the Daily Dose gear over there, because we know we're all doing that online shopping. And if you want to go directly to the source and find some Daily Dose gear, just stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose. You can find exactly what you need. Got a number of designs over there. Got standard logo gear over there. Got Daily Dose iTeam gear over there. Got a football and basketball design over there as well. But you can pick whatever color you want in a hoodie, a sweatshirt, a t-shirt. They've got a few different quality designs as far as the material that they're using. So make sure you stop by tpublic.com and get the Daily Dose gear that you need in your life. Speaking of that Daily Dose gear, you know, one listener is going to win a Daily Dose basketball t-shirt for winning our Daily Dose March Madness Bracket Challenge. That's going to be finishing up on Championship Monday here in a couple of weeks. But here are the current standings in the Daily Dose Bracket Challenge. In first place, we have Cool Ray. Unfortunately, Cool Ray has Baylor to win the final, so their lead probably is not going to last. In second place, we have Liz G, who is tied in second place with Easy Money. They both have Arizona winning it all. Travis G and that boy Luke are currently tied in fourth place. Travis G has Arizona. That boy Luke has Kansas winning it all. And then Who's Jeff is in sixth place. And Who's Jeff has also picked the University of Kansas to win it all. But hey, make no mistake, this challenge is still wide open. Because who picks the title winner correctly is still probably going to come out on top because everyone's brackets are so busted. You could be in one of the lower places right now, but if you have the right teams advancing going forward, you are still in the hunt. Remember, the winner of the Daily Dose Bracket Challenge will be receiving a Daily Dose Hoops t-shirt. We will announce the winner that Wednesday after Championship Monday takes place, and we'll keep everyone apprised of the point standings as the tournament continues. Today on the show, you know, like I said, we were out for a week and we had a ton of things happening in the sports world while we were down in Mexico laying on the beach. The NFL has been completely insane with all the movement going on over there, especially at one specific position. But what does any of it mean? We're going to look at that today. The NCAA tournament has been unpredictable. We have seen upsets. We have seen a couple of crazy games. Plus, Major League Baseball is back. The NBA has a new tackling dummy, let's say, and we are going to have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you this week that is March Madness flavored, so we have a lot to get to, and I need to stop messing around and actually get to work. And let's jump into a little bit of news that we have had this week. Got a couple of stories that I wanted to touch on. First off, do you realize that the NFL draft is just over a month away, and players and teams are scrambling right now to try to find the right fit? Who is the player that is going to make the most sense for our team? What situation would be the best for a player to go to? But here's an interesting little item. A few weeks back, you might have heard that University of Pittsburgh quarterback Kenny Pickett came in a little bit small on the hand size chart. At the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, the Heisman Trophy finalist's hands were measured at just 8.5 inches. And that measurement was actually much discussed. Pickett took a lot of grief on like social media for his, you know, toddler-sized hands. Now, I personally, I don't weigh that factor too heavily. I mean, Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, he doesn't have huge hands. Tennessee Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill doesn't have huge hands. Neither does Detroit Lions quarterback Jared Goff. There have been guys in history that understand how to throw the ball, and their hand size is pretty irrelevant. There are also really, really terrible quarterbacks that have giant hands. Hey, I'm way more interested in if you can play the quarterback position rather than the goofy things sometimes we measure at the NFL Combine, such as hand size. But I mean, some teams are weird about those things. Some teams will look at that and say, well, we're not drafting Pickett. His hands aren't big enough. Guys like John Elway are going to look at Kenny Pickett and say, well, you're not 7 foot tall, so I don't want you. You understand what I'm saying. Well, here's something interesting that took place. On Monday, Kenny Pickett held his pro day at the University of Pittsburgh. And get this, his hand size increased by an eighth of an inch from the measurement that was taken at the scouting combine. He checked in this time at 8 5/8 inches on his hand size. Folks, I don't want to go all conspiracy theory here, but is my man Kenny Pickett getting, I don't know, enhancements? Is that a thing? Finger extensions or something? I don't know that as a grown man, your hands can just grow. We might need to look into this a little bit closer because we might need to test Kenny Pickett for, I don't know, hand Viagra or something. This seems really, really weird to me. And here's what's weirder. I promise you, there will be some stupid team that will say, well, actually, we weren't sure one way or the other. And then the hand size cinched it for us. NFL teams, if you're weighing hand size that much, you don't have a prayer of having success. Finally, I'm going to talk just a little tiny bit of NHL today on the dose. We've got a lot of things we've got to get to today. Going to talk just a tiny bit of National Hockey League. It seems that the Toronto Maple Leafs will be wearing an alternate jersey for their game tonight against the New Jersey Devils. And that jersey has been designed by Canadian singing pop star Justin Bieber. That's kind of surprising, right? I mean, the NHL says it is the first reversible NHL sweater ever in North American professional sports. The jersey, created for the Leafs' annual youth-oriented next-gen game, is a collaboration with Bieber, his fashion brand, Drew House, and Adidas. And the Biebs actually issued a statement on the jersey. My love for the Toronto Maple Leafs has always been a big part of who I am, and my passion for the team and the passion of millions of fans is stitched into this sweater. I'm grateful to the Leafs for the chance to team up again to create something so authentic for the team and its fans. Kids, I want you to remember this as you hear this story. Remember that the Toronto Maple Leafs have the longest championship drought in all of hockey at 53 seasons without a Stanley Cup. Justin Bieber is designing a jersey for them. Yet now that's not so surprising, is it? Like, it all kind of makes sense cosmically, doesn't it? I mean, this is basically the equivalent of Pete Davidson designing a jersey for the New York Jets. And when you hear that, you go, oh, well, yeah, that would make perfect sense. This is the exact same thing. Okay, coming back, we need to get to a number of stories that we missed while we were out. No, I'm not going to rehash every single thing in great detail, but there are a few things that we did learn while we were out. And now that some of the dust has settled, we want to take a look at those things and see exactly what we really did learn. We still have a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. So we were off last week on vacation, but let's recap some of the bigger stories that we have watched take place in sports and kind of take a look at what we have learned from some of these stories now that they've kind of settled in. And where else could we start this week but in March Madness? In the men's NCAA basketball tournament, the NCAA Sweet 16 will tip off tomorrow as we are now down to just 8 matchups. But I want to take a look at a few of the things that we have learned from this wild and crazy tournament so far. And one of the things that we have learned is that being a top seed this year, hey, it is a dangerous place to be. So far, through the first 2 rounds, we have already lost a number 1 seed in Baylor. We have lost 2 number 2 seeds in Kentucky and Auburn, both SEC teams, I might add. We have lost 2 number 3 seeds in Tennessee and Wisconsin. There's another SEC team. And we have lost a number 4 seed in Illinois. It's kind of crazy to think about, but the Sweet 16 will feature 4 double-digit seeds. We have number 10 Miami, number 11 Iowa State, number 11 Michigan, and of course, number 15 St. Peter's. By the way, a little stat for you. Since the tournament expanded to 64 teams back in 1985, only 4 Sweet 16s have included 4 or more double-digit seeds. And those years were this year, 2022, last year, 2021, 2011, and back in 1999. Now, we told you going into this tournament, this thing is just wide open. And anyone could be beaten. And it has been absolutely true. And for those teams that got knocked out, for the 1 seed and the 2 number 2 seeds and the 2 number 3 seeds and the 4 seed, for all those teams that did get knocked out, don't forget number 1 Arizona, number 1 Gonzaga, and number 1 Kansas all had to scrape out single digit wins. So they could have been right there with those teams. And you know, it is easy to look at this tournament and we all kind of say the same thing. Well, there is no true powerhouse of a team. There's no true heavy favorite in this tournament. And that's true. I totally understand that. But do not dismiss the quality of the competition at those lower seeds. Because yes, we don't have an overpowering favorite. That's absolutely true. But we also have a lot of really good teams that are way lower seeded. Now, some of that is some of those double-digit seeds. They're really good. You look at St. Peter's. No one saw them coming. And if they play Kentucky five more times, maybe Kentucky wins four of them. But on that day, St. Peter's was better. So some of it is those lower seeds are just really playing good basketball. And then, let's be honest, some of it is the selection committee missed on a few of these teams. You're going to have a hard time convincing me that Michigan is an 11, that Iowa State is an 11, that Miami is a 10. There's no way. They're way, way better than that. That tells me the committee might have botched this just a little bit, as will happen many, many years. That does happen a lot. Will this be one of those years, though, where we end up with a double-digit seed making the Final Four? It kind of looks like it could be that year. We will see what this weekend brings. But if you are a top seed this year, it has not been particularly easy. We have also learned that a couple conferences, yeah, they struggled a lot. Do you realize that the Big Ten Conference, a conference, I might add, that we all think of as just, well, that's one of the biggest dogs out there, right? The Big Ten is huge. And I'm not going to discount that. I really think they are that good. But think about this. The Big Ten has now put 18 teams into the last two NCAA tournaments, this year and last year. Only three of those teams have even advanced to the Sweet 16. This year, the Big Ten got nine teams into the tournament. Wisconsin, Michigan State, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio State, Rutgers, Purdue, Indiana, and Iowa. They all made the tournament. And right now, Purdue and Michigan are the only teams left. I know we all kind of pencil in the Big Ten as one of the top conferences every single year in hoops, but based on the past 2 years, they're not really living up to that. Now, understand this. A lot of times we look at these conferences and we say, hey, this conference did really, really terrible. This conference did great. But it's all about matchups. I mean, if you scraped in as a 12 seed and then you won your game, cool. If you were getting a bunch of top seeds and losing those games, that's a little bit different of a situation. So a lot of this is matchups. Who did you end up matching up against? Maybe it was just a bad matchup for you. But I think it is safe to say, over the last 2 years at least, the Big Ten might be a tad overrated. Hey, it's not just the Big Ten. We saw the SEC struggle quite a bit too. And do not forget, at least locally here, the Mountain West, which had looked strong all season. The Mountain West sent four teams to the dance. They sent Colorado State, San Diego State, Boise State, and the Wyoming Cowboys. And the Mountain West failed to get even a single win. The Mountain West went 0-4 in the first round. Ouch. Hey, that stings. And you know the worst part about it is future Mountain West teams will pay for the sins of this year. Because you know, like it or not, the selection committee will remember the Mountain West going 0-4 in the tournament this year, and they will hold it against them next year, and maybe the next year. Way to screw your future generations, Mountain West. You guys needed to come out somehow with a win and didn't get that done. On the other end of the spectrum, we learned that for all of the talk of this conference being down, the ACC is stepping up and performing the best now in the tournament on the big stage. Hey, the ACC, we all looked at it and said it was down, and it looked down. It doesn't look like there are great teams in the ACC. They only got five bids into the tournament. The ACC, of course, got Duke, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Miami, and Virginia Tech. Well, in the first round, only Virginia Tech lost. Notre Dame lost in the round of 32, but don't forget, Notre Dame had played in that first four game, and then they had also won their round of 64 game, and Duke, North Carolina, and Miami are now in the Sweet 16. Now, can the ACC keep winning games in a year that we all kind of looked at that conference and said, I don't know that they have the horses to really play at that level? So far, it's looking like they are much, much stronger than expected. We have also learned in the 2022 NCAA tournament that the refereeing in these games, it's been a little rough. And hey, I'll be very, very honest. I'm not banging on these guys. They do the best job that they can for the most part, but the game is so fast. And we have so many slow motion replay angles There's no way these guys can possibly be as sharp as what we are seeing at home on our TVs. And then you have everyone acting like, well, these games are fixed. These refs are terrible. But it's such a difficult job. It is an impossible job. But there have been a few calls in these games. They've been a little rough. The technical foul on Brady Manek in the North Carolina versus Baylor game, I didn't have a huge problem with it. The fact that it got bumped up to a grade 2 technical, I mean, he looked back and he swung an elbow, he gets ejected. But it's not great optics. When the number one seeded Baylor was down big and then you toss a player from the lower seed and the game turns, it looks ugly. Did they get it right? Probably. I don't know that I like it, but yeah, they probably did. Then you had the Illinois versus Houston game where Illinois cuts Houston's lead to, I think it was 5 points on a dunk, and the ref teed the kid up for hanging on the rim, even though you can see he clearly did it for safety. Now, I guess the ref admitted after the game shouldn't have called that, but the technical killed Illinois' momentum and Houston rolled to a 15-point win. It's a bad call. Probably a little too quick with that whistle. Then we had the end of the Arizona versus TCU game where Arizona commits an obvious foul in the backcourt in the final 10 seconds of regulation and the refs just swallowed their whistles. Fortunately, Arizona didn't win the game on that no call, but I mean, TCU could have won the game if they're shooting free throws and they could have won it and knocked Arizona out. Now again, I don't think any of these games, any of these refs, these calls aren't dirty. They're not nefarious. It's just that officials have made some pretty glaring mistakes. And what can you do? Here is the bottom line. It is a difficult job that no one wants. Why in the world would you want to do that job? I've done that job. And I only did it at a lower level. And it was brutal. Every single night, you got hammered. Why would you take that job? There is a huge shortage of officials because we're so hard on them. They don't want to do the job anymore, and we're paying for that. Because the more we complain, the worse the refs get, because the smart ones get out of that business and go do something else. Okay, so now we are down to the Sweet 16, which does begin tomorrow with number 4 Arkansas facing number 1 Gonzaga. Interesting game there. Number 11 Michigan facing number 2 Villanova. I can't wait for that game, I'll be very honest. Number 3 Texas Tech versus number 2 Duke. Really good matchup. We'll see how tough Duke can play. And number 4 Houston versus number 1 Arizona. I was not overly impressed with the defense and rebounding of Arizona. We'll see if Houston can put any pressure on them. Then, on Friday, we've got another 4 great games. We have number 15 St. Peter's versus number 3 Purdue. Hey, there's no way St. Peter's can hang with Purdue. No chance. Just like there was no way they could get this far, right? We'll see if they can win it again. Number 4, Providence versus number 1, Kansas might be very good. Number 8, North Carolina versus number 4, UCLA. And number 11, Iowa State versus number 10, Miami in a game of two teams that should not have been seeded that low. Then, of course, we will have the winners of these games playing each other on Saturday and Sunday in the Elite Eight. The winners will advance to the Final Four. I'm not going to pick each of these games right now. I will just say this. Watching the first two rounds, and I watched a lot of these games, the teams that have impressed me the most so far, I would say are probably UCLA, Duke, North Carolina is playing red hot right now. I don't know if they can keep that up. Purdue, Iowa State, and Villanova. Those are the teams that have impressed me the most. We will see who can survive advance. But you know, we've already seen this tournament be completely unpredictable. So starting tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday should be really, really fun. The Sweet 16 to me is always the best round because you've gotten rid of a few teams that, let's be honest, aren't quite ready for prime time. And now we get down to some highly competitive games. This weekend should be great. Let's move over to the NFL because we learned that NFL quarterbacks are just bouncing all over the league. Think about this for a second. Aaron Rodgers re-signed a new deal. He is staying in Green Bay. Okay. Kirk Cousins somehow got a contract extension. He will stay in Minnesota. Okay. So two guys are staying. But then, of course, Russell Wilson got traded to Denver. Carson Wentz got traded to Washington. and Deshaun Watson got traded to Cleveland. Oh, and by the way, Cleveland starting quarterback Baker Mayfield, now he wants out of Cleveland. He could be shipped at literally any minute. Teddy Bridgewater signed a contract to Miami. And we know in Miami, like, they have Tua. But we also know, one, Tua isn't great. And two, Tua is not a big guy, and that's a bad offensive line. You know Teddy Bridgewater is going to end up starting at some point for the Dolphins. But then Mitchell Trubisky also signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We actually aren't done. After 14 seasons of being the best quarterback in franchise history, the Atlanta Falcons made the move to trade quarterback Matt Ryan. Atlanta traded Ryan on Monday to the Indianapolis Colts. Matty Ice will become the fifth starting quarterback to start for the Colts under head coach Frank Reich. And he hasn't been there that long. The Colts are going through quarterbacks. We've seen a ton of movement that we have not seen in recent years, just at the quarterback position alone in free agency. Now, one side note that I kind of thought was funny, at least to me. When the Denver Broncos made their trade with the Seattle Seahawks to get Russell Wilson, the Broncos at that time had a plus 2,500 odds to win the Super Bowl. And if you don't know what that means is if you bet $100 and the Broncos actually won the Super Bowl, you would get $2,500 back in winnings. They made the trade to Seattle. They get Wilson. And when they did, their odds dropped from $2,500 to $1,200. If you bet $100, you would only get $1,200 in return. Pretty significant change there. Meanwhile, the Washington Commanders were a plus $6,000 to win the Super Bowl. Bet $100, get $6,000. They go out, they make the deal with the Indianapolis Colts to get quarterback Carson Wentz. And when they did, their Vegas odds actually got worse. Vegas dropped them to a plus $7,500. That is not what you want to hear if you're a Washington fan. Hey, we got our quarterback. How does Vegas think he is? Vegas thinks he's terrible. They think you'd have been better off without him. That's what Vegas thinks of the Washington Commanders. And when you look at Carson Wentz, it's hard not to side with Vegas. He hasn't looked great in a long, long time. The Indianapolis Colts were going to the playoffs. And then Carson Wentz kind of went off the rails, as he is wont to do. But hey, this is a great deal for the Colts. Because make no mistake, they had nothing. And they get Matt Ryan for basically like a can of Spam. They didn't give up anything here. The Colts have a very solid team. And now they have a quarterback that almost wins games. So that's actually an upgrade from Carson Wentz last year, because he doesn't almost win games. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston is headed back to New Orleans. They gave him a big contract. The Atlanta Falcons have now signed Marcus Mariota, and considering they don't really have anyone else, he's probably going to end up being their starter. We also learned over the past week or so that a grand jury in Harris County, Texas, declined to prosecute NFL quarterback Deshaun Watson after the 26-year-old quarterback was accused of sexual misconduct by right around 22 women. Now, 10 criminal complaints were submitted. 9 of those complaints were dismissed last Friday, and the 10th case was omitted by prosecutors. Now, understand this. Deshaun Watson got cleared by the grand jury. They're not going to prosecute. Deshaun Watson got traded to Cleveland. Here's the thing to understand. That doesn't mean Deshaun Watson is in the clear. He still faces civil cases. There will probably be at least 20 civil cases. Now, I assume Watson will plead the fifth. He'll probably end up settling for millions of dollars out of court. But here's the thing to remember. The NFL has proven if you are getting in trouble off the field, nothing to do with football necessarily, they will step in and they will discipline you. You are bringing shame to the league. They may sit you down for a while. And no, this last season where he sat out the entire year, that doesn't count. That wasn't anything the NFL made him do. That wasn't anything the NFL told Houston to do. That was a choice by the Houston Texans not to play Deshaun Watson because they didn't know what kind of trouble he was in. So now, what does the NFL do with Deshaun Watson? You would think punishment is forthcoming, right? You can't just let Deshaun go out and do whatever he was doing and bring, again, some shame to your league and not punish him at all. Hey, maybe all these women got together, they came up with a plan, and they said, we're all going to make up a story, Deshaun didn't do anything, and we're all going to say the same thing, and we're going to get him in trouble. Or, and I'm just lobbing this out there, maybe the grand jury has said, this is going to be really tough to prove, because this is all he said, she said. How are we going to prove any of it? There's no proof. Again, the burden of proof is on the prosecution. You have to be able to prove it. But again, this is a really bad look for the NFL shield if Deshaun is dragged into civil court, which it looks like he will be. And if so, I would think the NFL has to act. Hey, the Browns might have got Deshaun Watson. They might not have a quarterback for a while, though, because who knows how long the league is going to sit him down for, because no matter how you slice it, this is a bad, bad look for the NFL. Meanwhile, what do they do with Baker Mayfield? He said he wanted out. They told him, too bad. So I'm wondering, Cleveland is saying, hey, we know Deshaun's getting suspended, so we're going to keep Baker in our pocket, and then maybe later down the road, we can use him for something in a trade. But right now, we still need Baker Mayfield, because we don't know how long Deshaun is going to be out for. We can't count on him fully yet. So they may be waiting to do anything with Baker Mayfield until they find out what the NFL is going to do. Meanwhile, now that all the dust is kind of settling and we have the bigger names kind of finding their spots, we talked about this a little bit the week before we went on vacation. The AFC West is stacked with quarterbacks. You've got Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. You've got Russell Wilson in Denver. You've got Justin Herbert with the LA Chargers, and you've got Derek Carr with the Las Vegas Raiders. But the AFC North might be pushing for second place, because they will now have Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. They have Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. They will, at some point, have Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, and then they'll have whatever clown the Steelers roll out there, either Dwayne Haskins or Mitch Trubisky, or maybe they go draft someone. But that AFC North division, not bad with quarterbacks either. We'll have to see what the Steelers have, and we'll have to see what the Browns actually end up putting out on the field. But make no mistake, this offseason has already been wild. I don't know if I remember so many quarterbacks changing teams. So many quarterbacks with big names changing teams. And then, you know, you have some free agency stuff, and we still have some free agents out there that could be signed at any minute, going to be very interesting to watch. You know, we talked about the quarterbacks in the AFC West and the AFC North. Looking over at that NFC now, Matt Ryan is gone. How soft is the NFC quarterback situation? You have Aaron Rodgers, but he doesn't have a ton of help. You have the Rams and Matthew Stafford. You have, I guess, Dak Prescott with the Cowboys and Kyler Murray with the Cardinals, but the NFC is looking really, really soft in the quarterback department, which leads us to the next thing that we learned, because we learned over the past week that Tom Brady couldn't stand staying home with Giselle and his kids after only like 2 months. Forget retirement. Tom Brady was like, if I have to hear her whining one more time that I need to take the kids to school, you know what? Never mind. You know what, Giselle? I'm unretired. How do you like that? He didn't even make it to mini camp. Tom Brady, when the season ended, was like, I'm done. I'm retiring. I'm out. That's the end. It took him like 6 weeks to be like, oh, I can't take it. I got to get out. This woman and these children are driving me insane. This was one of the shortest holdouts ever. Tom showed no perseverance whatsoever. Now, maybe he couldn't take, I don't know, the high gas prices on just one salary. Maybe he didn't like the idea that both John Elway and Peyton Manning have one-upped him on the retirement thing. Maybe he just didn't like Adam Schefter breaking the news when he hadn't fully decided. I don't know what it was. Maybe he can't stand his wife and kids. But Tom Brady is back. And because he's back, once again, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be a contender. And I know we kind of forget about Tampa. We look at some of these other teams. Some of these other teams are getting new pieces. This team's going to be good. Hey, Tampa's going to be right in the thick of it, because that is just what Tom Brady does. I mean, right now, I would put the Buccaneers and the Rams as the heavy favorites over the NFC, just because the quarterback pool over there is so thin. Moving over to a sport that we don't talk a whole lot about here at The Dose, but we did also learn over the past week that Major League Baseball pulled their collective heads out of their collective behinds, and they decided to end the lockout between ownership and players. Major League Baseball teams are set to play a full 162-game season again in 2022. Opening day has been bumped back to April 7th. Although, I'll just tell you right now, opening day probably won't be publicized at all. They like to keep that a secret. That's just how baseball rolls. But the lockout came to an end on its 99th day. The owners first enacted the lockout back on December 2nd when the previous collective bargaining agreement had expired. But that did mark MLB's first work stoppage since back in 94-95 with the players' strike. And we remember how ugly that got. So, the players are now back. Preseason stuff is rolling. They're starting to play games again. So what massive changes are we going to have? What did the players get? What did the owners get? We had the big lockout. There was no CBA. They held up. What are the big massive changes that are coming for Major League Baseball? Get ready. I know I tell you this a lot, but you might want to sit down. The game is going to look very, very different. For starters, the league minimum salary was raised so younger players can make more money sooner. That's a good thing for the players. You can go in, you can get a contract, you can make a little bit more money, so you're not scrambling trying to make it all at the back end. That's a good thing. They did change the postseason. It will be bumped to 12 teams, which is up from 10 teams. Teams will also wear advertising patches on their uniforms, and the bases are going to be physically larger. They actually are making a bigger base. They say it's a safety thing. So, once again, baseball might have more work stoppages than any other league, but they sure knock your socks off when they go back to work, don't they? Larger bases and uniform advertising? Hey, where can I sign up for that MLB TV package? You can't hold me back. That is exciting stuff. That's something I think every sports fan would want, right? Bigger patches on the jerseys and larger bases. Whew, I'm sure glad they got these things going. You know, Major League Baseball was catching the NBA in their postseason TV ratings. I have to wonder if after this lockout, if fans kind of remember why they stopped watching Major League Baseball. Because both sides are so petty and they argue all the time and we have these stoppages in play all the time. You have to wonder, are fans just going to come rushing back and say, oh, good, baseball's back? Or are they going to go, oh, yeah, you guys do this every few years, don't you? You know what? Never mind. We'll find something else to do. It's spring. It's summer. We can go outside. We don't need baseball. We sure don't need it until the postseason. Baseball, again, can never, ever get out of their own way. Finally, we move to the National Basketball Association, where the Phoenix Suns are cruising in the West. The Miami Heat have a real nice lead over in the East, and the Los Angeles Lakers, well, they're kind of a mess. The Lakers are now like 10, 11 games under 500. They are pushing to even make the playoffs. Remember, this was supposed to be a super team. So much for that. LeBron James knows this team is a dumpster fire. He has given up on winning. Now you can tell he's just focused on winning a scoring title. Then he can at least act like, well, hey, I was doing my part. I am clearly 1B to Michael Jordan's 1A, even though like adults, like grown folks that watch Mike and have now watched LeBron know that's an abomination. But then, forget LeBron. Let's talk about something else. We have the curious case of Los Angeles Lakers guard Russell Westbrook. You know, the Lakers gave up some significant talent to bring Russ to LA. And to put it mildly, he hasn't been great. His shooting is really poor. His decision-making is horrible. And the hometown fans are not happy. In fact, they have taken to calling Russell Westbrook, Russell Westbrick. Pretty clever, right? Well, we learned over the past week that Russ doesn't care for that nickname at all. Like, he's really offended by it. In fact, here's what Russell Westbrook had to say about the nickname. When it comes to basketball, I don't mind the criticism of missing or making a shot, but the moment it becomes where my name is getting shamed, it becomes an issue. I've kind of let it go in the past because it never really bothered me. Wait, this is actually where the story is going to get a little more absurd. But it really hit me the other day, Westbrook continued. Me and my wife were at a parent-teacher conference for my son, and the teacher told me, you know, Noah is so proud of his name. He writes it everywhere. He tells everyone, I'm Westbrook. I'm a Westbrook. And I kind of sat there in shock, and it just hit me. I can no longer allow people, for example, Westbrook to me is now shaming. Shaming my name and my legacy for my kid. It's a name that means more to me, my wife, my mom, my dad, and the ones that paved the way for me. No, seriously, that's what he said. He said people calling him Westbrook was shaming his legacy and shaming his children. You mean to tell me, I might have this wrong, you mean to tell me you're in the public eye and you're taking some criticism? Wow, what's that like? You know, Russ has always kind of presented himself as like a tough guy. He's always kind of tough on the court. He kind of looks like a bulldog. He always is like exploding, trying to drive to the hole. Just a tough guy. He's always flexing, getting people thrown out of the game. He wants to fight somebody. Always kind of comes off as a tough guy. I'm telling you right now, this might be the whiniest, crybabiest, stupidest take I have heard in a while. You're getting criticized and it's affecting your kids? Tell that to like Christian Laettner. Tell that to like Chris Webber or Patrick Ewing or Bill Buckner or Joe Pisarcik or pretty much any athlete who's ever played in the city of Philadelphia. You're telling me changing your name from Westbrook to Westbrick. Man, that's really, really rough. But that is what's killing you? Having your name tweaked a little bit? You know, I would bet, and I'm just guessing, I would bet Bill Russell, maybe Hank Aaron, they probably had some things thrown at them that were a little bit meaner than what Russ is being called with the whole Westbrick thing. You know what? Forget them. Forget any of that. I would bet the average youth official gets called something worse than Westbrick every single day. And I mean, Russ, at least you have the millions of dollars. You can blow your nose into $100 bills when you get sacked. Not like these refs that are getting paid nothing. Seriously? Westbrick? Is that hurtful? And that offensive to you? We clearly did not teach this generation the whole sticks and stones thing because they needed that lesson. They are struggling, apparently. Getting called Westbrick is hurting his family. Hey, to quote Lakers great Kobe Bryant, Russell Westbrook, you're soft. Okay, coming back. March Madness has already been absolutely wild. We have seen upsets. We have seen last second shots. But one of the biggest comebacks of all time came up just a little short over the weekend. So what are the biggest comebacks in tournament history? Our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to count down the biggest ones when we get back. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, the 2022 NCAA tournament has been every bit as unpredictable as we thought it would be. On Saturday, in the round of 32, we thought we might be witnessing some history. The defending champion, number one seed, Baylor Bears were facing the number 8 North Carolina Tar Heels, who suddenly, by the way, are red hot. And at one point in the second half, the Tar Heels were leading the defending champions by 25 points. Now, some of that is North Carolina is playing pretty well right now. But also, what was Baylor doing? Why were you down 25? For some reason, Baylor wasn't ready to go. They are the defending champs. I don't know what the deal was with Baylor early on, but they were not ready to play for some odd reason. But then they found some momentum. The Baylor Bears went on a 38-13 run in the final 10 minutes to tie the game, and they sent the game into overtime. Hey, everything is going Baylor's way. They are the champs. They found a way to come back. They're going to win this thing in overtime. But then in overtime, North Carolina hit a few tough shots. Baylor took some bad, ill-advised shots, and the Tar Heels held on to get the win and pull off the upset. The Bears come from down 25 points, but they failed to survive and advance and move on. And now North Carolina instead goes on to the Sweet 16, and Baylor became the first number one seed in this tournament to have gone down. Well, the Bears may have come up short, But that hasn't always been the case, of course. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top 5 largest comebacks by point margin in the NCAA tournament of all time. And I will give you this hint. If Baylor had pulled it off, they would have made our list in a pretty nice spot. Let's go ahead and jump in. And let's start off at number 5. You know, when we think of the Gonzaga Bulldogs now, we think of a team that is going to contend for a title pretty much every single year. But back in 2006, that wasn't exactly the case. They had head coach Mark Few, but the Zags were kind of a small conference, weird school that no one had really heard of. They're getting better. They're doing some things, but they're not like a national contender. But they were improving. In 2006, Gonzaga was the number 3 seed, and in the Sweet 16, they found themselves facing the number 2 UCLA Bruins. Now, UCLA was really good. UCLA had Jordan Farmar, they had Aaron Aflalo, they had Darren Collison, and Gonzaga basically had a couple of decent players, and then they had this gawky-looking nerd that could shoot the heck out of it by the name of Adam Morrison. But somehow, in the first half, Gonzaga jumped out to a 17-point lead. They were controlling the game into the second half. They were still up 9 with just 3 minutes to play. And then the wheels just came off for the Bulldogs. The Bruins score the final 11 straight points of the game. Gonzaga couldn't manufacture a single bucket. And the lasting image of this game was Gonzaga star Adam Morrison sitting on the floor in tears, even though there was actually still some time left to play. UCLA would roll clear to the national championship game, but then they would get knocked off by the Florida Gators in that final. But UCLA did come back from down 17 points to win, and that comes in on our list today at number 5. We move on to number 4. And we go back just 1 year from our number 5 entry. We go back to 2005. You might actually remember the 2005 NCAA tournament. The North Carolina Tar Heels with Sean May and Raymond Felton and Marvin Williams, they would beat Illinois to win the title. But back in the Elite Eight, it was the number 4 Louisville Cardinals and head coach Rick Pitino. You might remember a player they had named Francisco Garcia. And they were facing a scrappy number 7 West Virginia Mountaineer squad with guys by the name of Kevin Pitznagel and Mike Ganzi. And they had head coach John Beilein. The Mountaineers were a well-tuned machine. They ran their offense through the high post in Pitznagel. It was kind of Princeton-ish. They were a lot of cuts coming off the big man. You had a great three-point shooter in Ganzi. West Virginia led Louisville by 20 points in the first half. And then Louisville head coach Rick Pitino changed everything. Louisville had been playing zone. They switched to man. The Cardinals began trapping everything. They got real aggressive, driving to the basket on every possession. After trailing 38-18, Louisville outscored West Virginia 77-39 and sent the game into overtime. But make no mistake, the game was over. All the momentum was with Louisville. Louisville outscored West Virginia 16-8 in the extra period. They would advance to the Final Four. But then they would be blown out by Illinois in the Final Four. Hey, maybe they've used too much energy in the rally to get past West Virginia. I don't know what it was, but they did come back from down 20, and Louisville comes in today at number 4. So we kind of have a tie for third or second. Our number 3 entry and our number 2 entry are the same point total, but our number 2 entry is such a memorable game, I'm going to bump it to 2. At number 3, I'm going to put a game on here from 2018. The Villanova Wildcats won their second title in 3 seasons in 2018. And you might remember that the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, actually became the first number 16 seed to beat a number 1 seed when they upset overall top seed Virginia. But you might have forgotten in the round of 32, number 2 Cincinnati was rolling to an easy win over number 7 seed Nevada. They were up 65-43 with just over 11 minutes to play. 22 points? This game's over. There's not even going to be close. And then Nevada outscored Cincinnati 32-8 over the remainder of the game. Nevada was led by a kid named Cody Martin. He scored 25 points, and Josh Hall got a putback rebound with less than 10 seconds to play. The Wolfpack took their first lead of the game with just 9 seconds remaining. The Nevada Wolfpack of 2018 are a great example of why you don't take your foot off the accelerator. Cincinnati did. And we know in March Madness, anything can happen. It's madness. That's why we call it that. Nevada upset number 2 Cincinnati after being down 22 points. In the Sweet 16, unfortunately, Nevada would get knocked off by those scrappy Loyola Chicago Ramblers. But hey, Nevada coming back from down 22 and beating Cincinnati comes in today at number 3, or kind of 2B or whatever. But that comes in at number 3 today. Up next, at number 2, or 2A or whatever, is a 2001 game that is one of the most memorable in tournament history. Because the Duke Blue Devils were the favorite in this tournament. They were the number 1 overall seed in 2001. The Blue Devils had Shane Battier. They had Jason Williams. They had Carlos Boozer. They were loaded. Duke was 29-4 on the season, and their only conference loss of the year had come at the hands of one of their rivals, the Maryland Terrapins. Now, Maryland had Juan Dixon. They had Steve Blake. And when Maryland and Duke met in the Final Four in 2001, you just knew this game is going to be wild, and it lived up to all the hype. The game was close early on, and then Maryland got hot. Maryland went on a 20-4 run. They took a 39-17 lead with just under 7 minutes to play in the first half. 22 points? You're up 22 in the first half. This is going to be a blowout. Maryland was pressing. Duke guard Jason Williams was turning the ball over again and again. He couldn't make a shot. He was playing terrible. But remember, in these games, you have to do it one possession at a time. And contrary to what players and sometimes fans think, you can't come back on one play. You just have to chip away at it and see what happens. So Duke kind of started to change what they were doing. They started attacking the basket. They started getting Maryland into some foul trouble. At halftime, Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski told his team, "You're losing by so much, you can't play any worse. What are you worried about? Losing by 40? You've already been down 22. So now the pressure's off. Duke starts playing loose. They start attacking. They start wearing down Maryland. And the game turned. And it turned quickly. Duke would outscore Maryland 78-45 with just under 7 minutes to play. Jason Williams, who completely flipped his game and found his game, would hit a three that gave the Blue Devils their first lead of the night. But Duke didn't just come back to win. They cruised to an easy double-digit win. Duke won by 11 after being down by 22, but once they got rolling, it just couldn't be stopped. Duke, coming back from down 22 points to beat Maryland in the Final Four, comes in today at number 2. Keep this in mind, Duke would advance to the championship game where they would play Arizona, and they would win the title after beating Maryland in the Final Four. That comes in today at number 2. So we reach the number 1 comeback in March Madness history, at least that I could find anywhere, and we go back to 2012. And this game actually took place in a first 4 game. This would be a battle of number 14 seeds as the BYU Cougars would find themselves playing in Dayton against the Iona Gales. Now, neither of these two teams were great, but they managed to put on quite a show in their first 4 matchup. Iona jumped out fast. They led 49-24 with just over 6 minutes to play in the first half. A 25-point lead. Hey, this game is over. Iona went on to score 55 points in the first 16 minutes. You might remember they had a little guard named Scott Machado. Scott actually went on and played a little bit in the NBA. But after scoring 55 in the first 16 minutes of the game, Iona didn't score for over 4 full minutes. In fact, the Gales managed just 3 field goals and just 7 points over the next 16 and a half minutes. After leading by 25, Iona was outscored by the BYU Cougars 54 24-23. When BYU shooter Noah Hartsock hit a three-point shot with just over 2 minutes remaining, BYU took a lead for the first time. They would go on to beat Iona 78-72. They would advance to the next round, where they would play number 3 Marquette, where they would get shelled by 20. But BYU lands on our list of biggest comeback in March Madness history at number 1 today by erasing a 25-point deficit. Down 25 and you come back and win? That is just how crazy March Madness can be. Now on Saturday, we saw the Baylor Bears nearly match BYU. They had a 25-point comeback, but then they came up short in overtime against North Carolina. But here is something I found interesting when I put this list together. We did see Duke rally to beat Maryland, and then they went on to win the title in their next game. But every other team lost in their next game. Hey, these big comebacks, they take a lot out of you. Physically, mentally, emotionally, you are spent after these big comebacks. North Carolina managed to hold off Baylor on Saturday. They are now set to face UCLA on Friday in the Sweet 16. It's going to be very, very interesting to see if the Tar Heels have anything left in the tank, because we know that game this past Saturday, even though they came out on top, it had to drain them. That was a very, very challenging game for them to win. Hey, next week on The Dose, the NCAA Tournament Final Four will be set. Don't forget, Sweet 16 starts tomorrow, and then we have the Elite Eight games over the weekend. We are going to be previewing that Final Four. We'll take a look at who could be playing for the title on Championship Monday the following week. But it's not just March Madness. The NFL still has a lot of moves taking place in free agency. The NBA regular season is now down to like 9 or 10 games left. The playoffs are going to be here before we know it. We will have a ton to talk about here on The Dose. So be sure that you stop by and be sure that you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going on over there every week. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the podcast, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Okay, I see what you did there.